Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
This is Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour program focused on jazz and improvised music, news, radio, conversations, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Let us dig into the headlines. Centrum's Jazzport Townsend, the workshop is go. July 25th through the 31st at Fort Warden State Park in Port Townsend, Washington. The workshop is in person and online. Its faculty, led by artistic director bassist John Clayton, includes vocalist Sarah Grzarek, drummer Allison Miller, and pianist Don Clement. For more information, centrum.org. The Ellensburg Music Festival, being held in downtown Ellensburg, Washington, is scheduled for July 29th and 30th. For more information, jazzinthevalley.com. The Litchfield Jazz Festival in Litchfield, Connecticut, will be happening July 29th through the 31st. Featured performers include guitarist Mark Whitfield and vocalist Samara Joy. For more information, litchfieldjazzfest.com. Blue Note Jazz Fest in Napa Valley, California is scheduled July 30th and 31st. For more information, bluenotejazzfestival.com. Jazz in July at 92 NY in New York City is scheduled July 19th through the 28th. Here's the lineup. The Bill Sharlop Trio with special guest Joshua Redman on July 19th. Kenny Barron, Bill Sharlop, and Aaron Deal on July 21st. Joe Lovano, Warren Wolf, and Samara Joy on July 26th, and Mike Stern, Chris Potter, and Nicole Glover on July 28th. For more information, the number 92ny.org. Events this evening, Thursday, July 14th. The final night at the Django Reinhardt New York Festival at Birdland in New York City with special guest saxophonist Houston Person. For more information, DjangoBirdland.com. At Jazz at Senate Garage in Kingston, New York, vibraphonist Bill Ware and the Upstate All-Stars. For more information, JazzStock.com. At Elastic in Chicago, Illinois, drummer Tim Daisy's birthday, trios 3x3 for three sets beginning at 8:30 p.m. And on July 18th, Third Shore Collective and James Davis's Beveled. For more information, ElasticArts.org. Saxophonist Greg Ward is conducting a residency at the Hungry Brain in Chicago, Illinois, 9 p.m. For more information, hungrybrainchicago.com. Tomorrow night at Constellation in Chicago, Illinois, guitarist Jeff Parker and the New Breed, 8:30 p.m. For more information, constellation-chicago.com. This Friday and Saturday night, July 15th and 16th at the Jazz Forum in Tarrytown, New York, vibraphonist Joe Locke and his quartet for two sets. And on Sunday, July 17th for two sets, the Microscopic Septet. For more information, jazzforumarts.org. At Birdland in New York City, inside of Birdland Theater tomorrow night, July 15th through Sunday, July 17th for two sets, reed player Lou Tobakken and his trio with guests. And inside of Birdland Jazz Club on Sunday, July 17th, trumpeter Kellen Hannes and her quintet. For more information, birdlandjazz.com. Saxophonist Caleb Wheeler Curtis will be at the Jazz Gallery in New York City tomorrow night, Friday, July 15th, with pianist Aaron Evans, bassist Rahsaan Carter, and drummer Alan Mednard. For more information, jazzgallery.org. Jazz Sundays at the Falcon in Marlborough, New York. This Sunday, July 17th, 7 p.m., drummer Jeff Tane Watts and his travel band. For more information, liveatthefalcon.com. Trombonist Nick Finzer performs at Dizzy's Club in New York City on July 19th. For more information, 2022.jazz.org. And at the Blue Note Jazz Club in New York City on Sunday, July 17th, harmonica player Hendrik Merkens and his quartet. And July 19th through the 24th, it's the Bad Plus. For more information, bluenotejazz.com. And now for new releases. Coming out tomorrow, Friday, July 15th, vibraphonist Dan Neville and vocalist ex Yomara Torres's La Voz del Mar, and trombonist Miro Henry Sobrier's Two of Swords, both on patois, drummer Gard Nielsen's Elastic Wave on ECM, and organist Ronnie Foster's Reboot on Blue Note. Other new releases out now. Drummer Michael Carvin's Art of the Trio on MCE Music. Composer, poet, and multi-instrumentalist Bruno Burl's Noreno dos Elfetos on Far Out Recordings. Saxophonist Matthew Muniz's Noli Mi Tangier on Next Level. And vocalist Tierney Sutton's Paris Sessions 2, available at tierneysutton.com. All news items have been gathered from various media sources. For the latest updates, contact the source, venue, or business. Remember, I'm just the messenger. We'll start off the show with music. Thank you. From organist Ronnie Foster's first new release in 36 years, we heard After Chicago. The release is Reboot on Blue Note Records. And before that, we heard from pianist and composer Lafayette Gilchrist from his 2020 Lafayette Gilchrist music release, Now. We heard Rare Essence. The release addresses life in Baltimore, Maryland, race relations in America, and affairs of the heart. He was with bassist Herman Burney and drummer Eric Kennedy. You're listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC, 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Please send your comments, quips, and anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, feedback@wgxc.org, or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Our website is wgxc.org. My interview is with bassist Mark Wade. He's released his fourth album, True Stories, on Mark Wade Music and worldwide on AMP Music and Records with pianist Tim Harrison and drummer Scott Newman. So I want to thank you for joining me here on Situation Fluxus.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Good to be here.
Yeah. The one word to describe True Stories is inspired. Because you've complemented your compositions with the works of others, like bassist Charles Mingus and pianists Fred Hirsch and Frank Kimbrough, where did you come up with this idea?
Well, I think that for me, the people who I picked out for this album, to whose music I kind of used as a starting point to write my own music, I mean, in a way, it's always been like that, right? Like, we always, as musicians, we start out getting into this music by being inspired by certain musicians. I mean, of course, there's a, you know, you could list a put a list a mile long out there of people who were great in jazz music. But there's always going to be a few people who you gravitate to and come back to time and again. And those people whose music I kind of singled out on this album have always been influences for me over the years. And I would say that they've been influences on all the albums that I've done up till now. I think the difference is now I'm making a little bit more of an overt gesture, you know, towards those people, really singling in on, in some cases, specific musical elements or maybe just more general, you know, musical gestures to as the source of inspiration for this one.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, speaking of Charles Mingus, it's his centennial. Yeah. And numerous arts and educational organizations are celebrating it. How were you introduced to him? And what about his playing, ensemble leadership, and compositions have you come to appreciate?
Well, my introduction to Mingus was really through my teacher, Mike Richmond. I studied with the great bass teacher and player, Mike Richmond at NYU. He was, I think, just coming off the road with Miles Davis at the time. Before that, Mike had actually led the Mingus band after Mingus's passing for about, I think, for like 10 years or something like that. He was the bass player who led that band after Mingus died. So someone who was very well acquainted with Mingus's music, playing in the band like that, certainly. So he really kind of helped turn me on, you know, to some of Mingus's music. You know, the two records that always come to mind of his or Mingus and the Mingus Dynasty, those two big band records, really, I think, had a profound influence on me, particularly for Mingus's writing style more than anything. I think the obvious tag if you're a bass player, is that, oh, you liked Mingus because he played the bass. And it was really, I liked Mingus first and foremost for really for his writing and his ensemble leadership. Just how strong and unique his vision was at the time. You know, this interesting blend of what was extremely avant-garde in some ways, you know, at that time that he was writing, yet always steeped in the blues and this kind of roots-oriented thing. And his language is this incredible, like, melding of those two worlds in a way that you really, you know, for me anyways, haven't heard anyone do since. It's a very unique style for him. And so that's something that always stood out for me. So even if I don't write exactly like that, that concept, that kind of roadmap of pairing of styles and finding your unique voice was something that hit me early on with him.
Tell us about your history with Tim and with Scott.
So Tim Harrison, the piano player on this record, and Scott Newman, the drummer, this band has been together now about 9 years. We first played together as this, as you know, the Mark Wade Trio about 9 years ago at a concert at Flushing Town Hall here in Queens. We've been very fortunate to perform out there over the years quite a bit, which is, it's been a nice venue for us. I've known Scott and Tim longer than that. We've have a mutual band leader who has employed us by the name of Bill Warfield, who runs the jazz program at Lehigh University. I'm on the faculty now at Lehigh University. Tim and Scott both, you know, have been for a lot longer than me. So I've always known Tim and Scott. I've known them for many years, and you know, I would sub in the band and we'd play together, and I always knew I liked their playing. So when it came time to put together a group, I kind of picked them out because I knew that I got along with them well musically and off the bandstand too, but we got along musically. We shared a similar kind of musical identity, and I knew that the two of them together had worked together. So it was a little bit of a head start as far as the band chemistry was concerned.
Except for your first release, Event Horizon, your other releases, Moving Day, Songs of Isolation, and now True Stories, are on the Oslo, Norway-based record label AMP Music and Records. How did you and AMP find each other?
At the time of the second album coming out, Moving Day, I was working with an agent over in Belgium. And he was helping me kind of connect me to some of the European scene a little bit more. I think there's this fallacy sometimes that American musicians can kind of just like throw their CD somewhere in the vicinity of Europe and it'll land and like all these things are just going to happen for you. And that might have been the case, you know, about 40 or 50 years ago, but that's not the case anymore. You know, there's a lot of fine musicians there in their own right and a lot of Americans who are always trying to find work over there. So I had an agent to help me kind of make some connections, you know, to some people over there. And one of the people he helped connect me to was Anders Thorn at AMP Music and Records. He is indeed in Oslo, Norway, although currently residing in Osaka, Japan. His wife is Japanese, so they took a year to live in Japan, but he'll be coming back to Oslo. And that's been helpful for me to just kind of further my connections, you know, to Europe, to some players over there. I know some people playing with them either here in the States or over there or in the UK in more recent years. But it's been a good partnership for me. Very helpful for an American artist if you're trying to make some inroads over there to have people on the ground there who are interested in actively promoting your music.
So I'll ask this question. Is having an American on their label desirable, or do they think that it raises their profile? Do they feel it makes them look more professional?
I think it does. You know, what has been a really interesting education for me is that every country is different over there, you know, and that may sound like an obvious statement to make, but every music market is a little different over there as to how popular and how attractive American artists are to them and what kind of American music and what kind of American jazz. So, you know, a place like the UK, you know, American, New York jazz musician, they like that stuff over there. Italy, yes. Germany, yes. France, not as much. You know, it's interesting. That's the largest jazz market in Europe, and yet they can be a little bit more protectionist, you know, for their own French artists, and current trends over there aren't always as strongly as interested in as a modern American jazz, maybe as Germany or Italy. And so every country kind of has its own thing, and those things change. And that's, and this is just my experience, and from talking from people over there, this is the feedback I've gotten. Certainly for a label like for AMP, that was something that was very attractive to them, having an American artist, you know, with some New York credentials and Downbeat magazine and all that kind of stuff. Like that was something that does resonate for them, and did resonate for him to put me on the label. But it really does depend where you go, I think.
One of those artists who lives a double life, playing jazz and improvised music and classical music. Physically, what are the different demands on you? For instance, playing an Ornette Coleman piece compared to playing a Haydn symphony, you know, the stance, hand positions.
Sure. It's quite profound, actually. It's very different. And I think if anything, playing classical music and the technique that comes from doing that, like there are just certain technical requirements for playing even the simplest, you know, classical piece that you might not need to deal with as an extremely accomplished jazz bass player, right? Like you can, there's just certain demands that the instrument asks of you if you're going to play with the bow and play that kind of music that you don't necessarily have to have to play jazz. Doesn't make one better than the other. It's just that's the reality, right? The greatest jazz bass players in the universe didn't necessarily play in a symphony orchestra, and that certainly didn't hold them back from being some of the greatest bass players, you know, in the world. So, but if you're going to do it, if you're going to play classical music, yeah, there's a very heavy technical component that you have to deal with, and it's a whole study, you know, in and of itself, of course. What I've tried to do is bring as much of that as I can to my jazz playing so that it isn't, you know, like this is, I stand, hold the bass and do all these other things so different from one to the other, because if you do that, you'll never end up doing either one at a very, you know, consistent level.
Yeah.
But there is some give and take, and I don't, you know, from a, not to bore people with getting into the weeds of bass technique, but it is a little different as to how I might play and stand when I play jazz and when I play classical music. Physically, the motions are a little different. But what has been so helpful for me is having that, some of that classical pedagogy to just make me a little bit more technically sound on the instrument, which does not mean notes per second. It just means being technically sound. So that means being able to play slow notes or no notes comfortably and being in control of the instrument as opposed to just maybe playing more notes.
Yeah. And you can probably get away with wearing a pair of Converse sneakers in a jazz band than in a symphony orchestra. They'd probably frown on that unless they were black Converse sneakers.
Yes. I'll tell you a very quick, funny story here. So like I was back in 2002, it was right after 9/11. I got asked to go down and play for the Key West Symphony. And I was really kind of over my head with that gig at the time. It was a really high level thing, but one of the regular guys didn't want to fly after 9/11. So We fly down. You're supposed to fly down with white tie and tail. So not just a tuxedo, but like long tails, white tie, the whole thing. They really wanted you dressed up. So we had a concert midweek and at the end of the week. The midweek one was in the middle of the day. And the night before, the Tuesday night before the Wednesday morning concert, I remember I had left my tuxedo pants back in New York.
Uh-oh.
And I thought, well, this isn't very good, right? So I'm lying there at 1 a.m. thinking, like, what am I going to do? I'm on Key West. The concert's at 9 a.m. There's nowhere to go buy a pair of pants. What am I going to do? Well, it just so happened I had a pair of new black jeans with me that I happened to bring down. So I played the entire concert in white tie and tails and black jeans. And and they were very strict in this orchestra for dress code. I mean, they were very, very strict for the women, what they had to wear. And I got away with the concert. They didn't notice because the bass is kind of hiding my pants. And I had a roommate at the time and I had him FedEx my pants overnight to Key West so that I didn't get fired for the next gig. And it worked out. So,
yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Tales from the orchestra.
Well, Mark, as we're coming to the end of this interview, I want to ask you, well, what didn't I ask you? Is there something you'd like to tell us, an upcoming project or gig that we should know about?
If anybody is in the New York area, the next appearance for the Mark Waid Trio will be at Shanghai Jazz in Madison, New Jersey. New Jersey's their kind of premier jazz club there in Madison, not too far outside of New York. We'll also have a performance, a free outdoor performance at Labor Day on the waterfront in Long Island City, Queens, just opposite the United Nations building here on the East River on Labor Day at 4:00. But, you know, other than that, I encourage people to check out the album, check out the record. I know that there's been people out there who have really, you know, supported this record and supported the past record. So it's always nice to take the opportunity to say thank you for that. For everybody who has voted me in for the Downbeat Readers poll the number of past years, also thank you. And I will be bugging you all again to vote again this year as the polls are about to open. So.
For more information, markwaidmusicny.com. And now for more music.
Won't you be mine? Won't you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood. A neighborly day for beauty. Won't you be mine? Won't you be mine? Now I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in the neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor?
From San Francisco, California, Bay Area vocalist Kim Nally, from her release from May, I Want a Little Boy. On Kim Nally Jazz Productions, we heard the tune Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. And before that, from timbales player Henry Pucho Brown and his Latin Soul Brothers, from the 1996 prestige compilation Legends of Acid Jazz, the best of Pucho and his Latin Soul Brothers, we heard Psychedelic Pucho. Pucho and his New York-based band issued 7 albums on Prestige between 1966 and 1970. And we began the set with guitarist Rez Khan from his 6th album as a leader, Imaginary Road, on Painted Music Records. We listened to Neo Funk. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Tune in next Thursday at 10 a.m. for another show. I also host The Jazz Disturbance on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. To contact us about Situation Fluxus, thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com or info@wgxc.org. We appreciate your feedback. feedback@wgxc.org or leave a 3-minute message at area code 518-291-WGXC. Thank you.